Welcome to Real Estate and You. I'm your host, Scott Allison. I've got Roger Hoblock with us. He is the Parks Superintendent with the City of San Angelo, and he's going to talk about something that's real important to all of us, and that's our yards and our grass and taking care of it and the water usage. Very important to San Angelo. Of course, we're going to talk about some open houses and some of the newest listings in San Angelo. Stay tuned. We'll be back after a word from our sponsor. Welcome back to Real Estate and You. Hey, Roger, I sure appreciate you being here.
Oh, anytime, Scott. I always enjoy coming and visiting with you.
Let's talk about it. Let's get started. Some current the water levels, when we can water, what we're doing, and how that's affecting everybody.
Well, let's talk a little bit about where we're at with our water ordinance. Right now, we're in the conservation level. We have greater than 24 months of water left in our reservoirs and as a whole. And so, you know, we're at a point now where we can water twice a week rather than once a week. But that's not always the case where people need to be saying, okay, now I'm going to turn everything on to twice a week. In some cases, it may only need once a week or once every 2 weeks. So a person really needs to be more observant than anything as they're going into that. And, you know, in addition to that, our current ordinance talks about putting on no more than 1 inch of water per week. And so, you know, a person needs to have some idea what is 1 inch of water. And so I thought I'd talk to you a little bit about
because,
that.
Because I wish you would, because when you just said that, I have, other than looking at my rain gauge when it rains and know what an inch is, I have no idea how to do what
right,
you just said.
Right. Well, there's a pretty simple calculation for it. If you think about, there's, you know, an acre inch is 27,154 gallons, okay? And there's 43,560 square feet in an acre. So if you divide the 27,154 by the 43,560, you get 0.62, which roughly means that for every inch of water that you put down, you're putting down 0.62 gallons of water per square foot for that area. So it's real important for homeowners, sports field managers, anybody that's applying irrigation to understand how many or know how many square feet they have. It's important for pesticide applications, for fertilization, all those types of things, but it's also important for water because then you can kind of predict in a way what you might need in a given month. For example, you know, our typical landscape here, and probably even here in San Angelo, is about 5,000 square feet. Some have four, some have eight. But if we use 5,000 as an average, if you multiply that times the 0.62, you get about 3,100 gallons, which means that if you're going to put down 1 inch of water in a given time period, you're going to put down about 3,100 gallons per 5,000 square feet of landscape. Okay? In a dry month, if you have to do that four times, then you'd be putting down roughly 12,000 gallons, right? And then if you think about indoor water use, which is probably averages around 8,000 gallons a month, then you add those together, you end up with a total of 20,000 gallons. So when, Scott, you get your bill back and it's over 20,000 gallons and you know you only have about 4,000 to 5,000 square feet, you're probably either using too much indoors or you're using too much outdoors.
Now, how would I measure that? Like for the sprinkler system, how do you measure that?
That's a good question. What we try to do in the park system and what I encourage when I consult as well is performing what we call an irrigation audit. Basically, you're going to take catch cans or catch cups. It can be tuna, you know, empty tuna fish cans, whatever you can measure, and you place those throughout your landscape. You turn on your system and you let it run. It may need to run for 20 minutes. It may need to run for an hour. But you have to put enough down to where you can at least measure it. And then at that point, you cut it off, and let's say you get a half an inch in a half an hour. All right? Well, that would equate to 1 inch per hour as an application rate. So you'd need to let those zones run for at least 1 hour. You got to be careful, though, because sometimes with our soils, especially in the heavier clay soil areas, you'll get a lot of runoff. You can't put the entire inch down in one watering. Or what you may have to do is water all of your zones for half an hour and then turn it right back around and let it rewater starting over again for the other half an hour. That way it gives that the water time to move through that soil profile.
And we've had several houses, especially in the southwest part of town where there's a lot of clay, where the backyard slope.
Absolutely.
And they have a hard time. They say, I turn the water on, I've turned it on for just a little bit, and it runs right out into the alley.
Right. Aerification is another good practice on that turf area. If you can do that, if you can go in and aerify, that'll help provide an area where that water can actually infiltrate Good into idea. That soil profile. The other thing an audit will do, that you know, it'll give you that application rate, like we talked about, maybe 1 inch per hour, whatever it might be. But it also lets you look at what, you know, how uniform is your system. If you're only getting a quarter inch over in one corner, but you're getting an inch in the other corner, you may have some issues with your irrigation system. So that makes a big difference as well. Or, and it makes you be more observant. You may have some that are shooting out into the streets, onto sidewalks, running into the streets, those types of things, broken heads, whatnot. And it also, again, it helps you, you know, set your run times. For each of those zones. It just makes you be a more efficient and conservative type person.
You know, we talked already, you put in here water deep and infrequent, which is...
That's kind of a rule of thumb for water management. You know, on really any of the landscape plants, especially if they're established plants. You know, newly planted plants, you may have to water them a little more frequent, some of your annual beds, things like that. But when you have some of your good native plants growing here and they're mature, well-established, normally we encourage deep watering and very infrequent. If you tend to go very shallow when you water and you're doing it, you know, all the time, or what seems to be all the time, what's going to end up happening is most of your root system is going to be near the surface. And then when we get into these drought situations, those are the areas that usually die off first. And that's why a lot of people probably have those types of issues even now with the way the water situation or the drought situation was months ago.
We've got a house down, just curious, and it's a live oak, and I've never seen, but the roots are on the top of the ground.
Right.
So that would be an example of where they watered.
Yes, yes. And if you do some research, and I actually did this research when I was working on my master's, the majority of most of your tree roots, not all of them, but the vast majority of your trees and shrubs is right there in that upper probably 12 to 18 inches of soil. And so it's actually competing with whatever plants, whether it be shrubs, ornamentals, or turf grass that you might have. And so, yes, at the same time that you're watering your grass, you're watering your trees, too. And if you ever dig a ditch, you'll notice the majority of those feeder roots are right there near the surface.
Except for those darn mesquites.
Well, yeah, well, that's a whole other subject. The other thing, Scott, that I would recommend is, you know, tell people not to irrigate by a clock if they can. You know, if they're going to go off on vacation or if they have to be away for an extended period of time, then that's understandable. But if you know you're going to be at home for an extended period of time, throughout the summer when you're going to be watering, then, you know, go out there and measure, monitor your soil moisture before you turn that system on. Too many times I've walked on lawns as I consult with people, and they're basically moist. That's not the issue that's going on in that landscape. It could be insects, it could be diseases, whatever the case. But what ends up happening is these people, you know, they see a problem or a small problem, or they just think, hey, I've got to water, you know, twice a week, no matter what. So go out there, take a screwdriver, shovel, whatever the case may be, monitor that soil moisture down 6 inches, and see whether or not you really need to turn that system on. And then turn it on once it runs that cycle that night. When you go to work the next morning or get up, go over there and cut the thing off. And that is, to me, a really good way for people to
The way you're saying it kind of sounds like common sense.
Well, to some extent, yes. Yeah. But it forces you to be observant.
Yes.
Not only for water, but also for your plants. And so all in all, I think it's just a better way of managing.
Before, and this is kind of off the subject, when the roots are up above the ground, and if you cut those, will that hurt the tree? I mean, because does it have enough roots down system?
Well, it depends on what type of tree it is. You know, we see a lot of times with these live oaks especially, you'll see what we call little sprouting plants or water sprouts that come up. And a lot of times that's associated with digging. If you're digging up a flower bed or if you had to run a ditch through there, that's when you'll normally see that tree react that way. And what people need to keep in mind is that little water sprout, the roots of that are associated with that tree. If you go in there and spray it with Roundup or some other herbicide, it's going to be taken up by the entire tree, not just that little plant. So you have to be very careful. But yeah, depending on the type of tree it is, will sometimes, and what the environment is and the soil conditions, will dictate how that tree is going to establish its root system.
Good information.
Other things that people can do, Scott, would be to, of course, avoid windy days when they're irrigating or at night. Understand that our ordinance says that we cannot water between noon and 6, which is smart. That's when our evaporation is at its highest. Normally, our winds are at its highest at the same time, and air temperature and so forth. So, yes, water in the evenings or probably works better in the morning hours.
Well, and watering during the heat of the day, to me, that would be hard on the plants.
It can be, yes.
You know, I heard some people talking that when you water and the sun's, 12 noon, the water acts like a magnifying glass to the grass and just kind of burns it.
Yeah, in some cases that could be the case, especially if we have a little bit of salt in the water, and we do with our water. The other thing, I think people need to remember, Scott, is that most plants, as long as they're well established, have a good deep root system, they can handle any type of, not any type, but they can handle drought situations very well. It's just a matter of how they enter into that drought. If they've got a good root system, it's deep, it's healthy, most of the time it can make it out. Again, depending on the plant.
Just kind of switching horses on you. And one thing, like in Southland, when Lance and I did part of it, we put, at that time, this was, I remember 20 years ago, we put no xeriscaping. Mm-hmm. Of course, now there's a lot of xeriscaping, and we're obviously not going to enforce that on us for a lot of reasons, obviously water being the main reason.
Right, right. Well, that's certainly one of the trends.
And you see more and more of it now.
Yes, that and artificial turf, rock landscapes, things like that. So, let's start with the xeriscaping. I think that's a great method for planning out a landscape or redoing a landscape. What you have to be a little bit careful of is it's not a guarantee for water savings. And the reason why I say that, I actually did a demonstration in Hidalgo County down in South Texas years ago. And I had some people that we were monitoring their landscapes. And we put water meters on all of them. And what essentially happened was some of the people that had 100% xeriscape lawns, there was no turf, nothing like that, right next to a 100% St. Augustine grass lawn, the xeriscape lawn, the people who owned that were using 4 times the amount of water per square foot than the people with the St. Augustine grass lawn. And so the concept is great.
Now, how could that be?
Well, it depends on who's managing that water. If the people are not trained well, or if they're not monitoring their soil moisture or the plants that they have, they can run into those issues. And so what I try to tell people, again, is it's a great concept, but keep in mind, that good water management is the key, and the person that turns on and off that switch is where it'll lead to. The other thing, San Antonio Water System, they used to give out a lot of rebates for people to take out their turf and put in xeriscape. And what they found over time was that 25% of the folks that did that and that went into that program used less water. 50%, though, of those people used the same amount. And then the last 25% actually increased in water use. So overall, they really didn't get any water savings with the concept of encouraging people to xeriscape. Again, it doesn't mean that the concept's bad. It's just those people that put them in probably weren't trained well enough to know that they didn't need to use that amount of water. So it's a great concept, but it's all up to the people.
Well, and I think a lot of it, like, I'm learning something today from you. One, how to spell xeriscaping, by the way. It's not like I used to thought it was spelled. But a lot of it, I think, it's just ignorance. And on my part, I don't know. And, what needs what.
That's right.
And some education. I appreciate you sharing this information with us.
That's not a problem.
Let's talk. Okay, we're doing the rocks. And when you see, like, in SKG Engineering, I noticed they put the artificial turf. Well, right here in front of the radio station, they have the artificial turf.
Yes.
So you see more and more of that coming. Let's talk a little bit about that.
Well, again, we really don't fall into a water issue at that point from the standpoint of people using too much water on it, I hope, anyway.
And we hope. I pretty much feel we don't have to water fake grass.
That's right. But one of the things I would like to bring up and that people need to keep in mind is the heat load or the heat issues that come off of that. We actually went out last Friday, and we measured some temperature readings using a laser temperature and a little weather meter. And we were actually on one of the local artificial sports fields here in town. And it was about 2:30 in the afternoon, and the ambient temperature at about eye level, about 5 feet, was 98 degrees when you were standing on natural turf, and when you walked onto the artificial turf, it went up to 112 degrees at eye level. And so, you know, that can be a problem. When we measured some of the other areas around there, just to give you an example, we took a reading off of the natural turf, and it was about 100 degrees. So it was about 2 degrees difference than the ambient temperature that we had. When we took a reading on the asphalt parking lot that was next door, it was 140 degrees. The concrete walkway was 125 degrees. There was a rock pile there with white rock. It was 125 degrees. But what got interesting is when we actually measured the temperatures on the artificial turf with that crumb rubber that's in place, on the green color, the reading that we got was 163 degrees at 2:30 in the afternoon. And then on the black color, where they had the lines on the field, that was 174 degrees.
Unbelievable.
And so when you put your hand down even on that surface, so you could feel that heat definitely at 163 degrees. So it's not a matter of it's a bad thing. It's kind of like the xeriscaping. It's not a bad concept. It's just people need to know and be educated that there are some cons to it as well as some pros. But you need to keep in mind, if you're going to be putting rock or artificial turf or anything around your landscape, around your home, you may actually get some heat load off of that. And so that's why trees are important for shading. Turf, you know, natural turf can be very important for that from the standpoint of just cooling off the area.
It's amazing to me because, like Bob, the San Angelo Stadium, so you're saying that right there could, in the heat of the day, could be the artificial turf is 160-something degrees.
Scott, I actually did a little research before we went and did the measurements last Friday. And on the Internet, and anybody can go to this, there were several projects, research projects, that have been completed. And the highest reading that they've come up with so far at a 98-degree day was 200 degrees on the surface of an artificial field.
Unbelievable.
And so, you know, I would guess it has a lot of factors involved. But, you know, the thing about it is once you get over 120, 130 degrees on that surface, who really cares how hot it is at that point? It's hot.
Yeah.
160, 200 to me, and there's not, it might be 40 degrees difference, but it's hot.
Well, and we know here in August, we'll probably have a couple of 107 degree days.
Right.
You know,
right.
So that'll
and I just think people need to be aware of that. If they're going to make that purchase, they need to be aware that they're, you know, the games may need to be played at night or any type of play on that activity, you know, any activity during the nighttime or early morning hours. And then they probably need to be left alone during the heat of the day. Once they get into wintertime or early spring, it's really a non-issue at that point.
So, but they have really good information to know. So any other thing? I know you're a busy man. I know you're teaching at ASU. I know you take care of the city stuff, the parks and all that. Any updates for us?
No, not really, Scott. You know, the only thing is I encourage people all the time is just watch what's going on and watch what you're doing. Be responsible. Be responsible for what you're going to put into your landscape and then take responsibility of it and use water wisely. Even though we may be over 24 months, it won't take long before that'll get below 24 months if people abuse it. And we try to do that same thing in the Parks Department. There's only very specific areas that we water, and we're not watering very often, even now, even though we've moved back into the conservation mode of it. It was an eye-opener, as you know, when we get into those almost drought three levels.
And we were talking to some of the city council people that they said we're going to keep the restrictions on for a while, which I agree with them. When it's 100 and 100 plus, the evaporation at the lake has to be huge too.
Well, what you need to understand too, you know, we talked about the 1 inch of water, okay? When you look at actual water use from plants, and it's actually predicted from a computer system, okay, and it's called evapotranspiration. It's a computerized formula, all right? If you look at the summer months here in San Angelo, we average probably about 2.5, it's about 0.3 inches per day, 0.3 to 0.4 inches. So a third of an inch to a half inch per day loss, okay? You multiply that times 7 days, that's over 2 inches, all right? We're only allowed to water an inch. So, you know, some people, they get a little bit confused about why, well, you know, I'm putting on an inch, but I'm still losing ground on my landscape plants or on my turf. Well, it's because the rate of loss far exceeds what you're actually putting back on that turf. So, yeah, it can get.
Which goes back to your deal, pay attention to what's going on around you.
Exactly. And when you do water, water deep and then back off of it. Try to stay off of it as long as you can. Wait until you actually see signs of stress. It doesn't have to be major. You don't have to brown out, but you can start seeing signs of stretch in your grass or any other plant and go through that.
Hey, Roger, I appreciate you being here. Lots and lots of good information.
Anytime.
Hey, we're going to take a quick commercial break, and we'll be right back and talk about some open houses.